Hey everybody, welcome to Voices from the Front Lines, your grassroots movement public affairs hour on KPFK 90.7 FM, streaming live on the web at kpfk.org. One of the things we try to do on the show is have in-depth conversations with people, not sort of interviews, but conversations. So we're here today with Nady Dominguez, one of the leaders of the Dreamers movement. But I think there's been a lot of romanticism about the Dreamers. There's been a lot of misinformation about the Dreamers, about who are these people, really. You know, there's a sort of a superficial, they're good kids. But yeah, they're very politically developed. So Nady Dominguez has just finished an article for Truth Out. We're going to have her read in sections her article, and then I'm going to comment on it as we go along, and then we'll continue to have Nadia in the conversation, and then, as we always do, we're going to go to the phones. So our guest today is Nadia Dominguez. She's been on several times throughout the whole fight about the DREAM Act, but now I think this is the first time we've ever had you in studio, Nadia, and to really have a chance to talk in some detail. So we'll get to your background later, but as a writer, the best thing you did is you wrote an important article. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the article and start reading it?
Sure. I think for me, I just needed somewhere I can reflect on a lot of the work that we've been doing as immigrant youth movement and what I've been doing personally since I was 14, and then in my later years as a college student, and then after graduating in 2010 for the DREAM Act as a standalone bill. And this was an opportunity to put together those thoughts and reflect on them with the purpose of maybe hopefully, you know, igniting the fire and pushing more youth to be critical of our own movement so that we can always be reassessing what we're doing, the role we play in the immigrant rights movement, and hopefully leading some of those fights. So I'll begin reading some of...
Yeah, just one sentence on that I think it's really important for women to write, for oppressed nationality women to write. I think it's very important for all organizers to write, because it's hard. You have to put your ideas down very clearly, edit them, you know, every word counts. So as a writer, I'm going to be a very good listener, okay?
Okay.
So read away, my friend.
Sure. In recent years, immigrant youth have been the engine behind the immigrant rights movement, playing the roles of sympathetic character, the rebellious radical, and even the shrewd strategist. As we came to the scene as a unified group that had found each other on campuses, conferences, and social networks, our energy and even our identity became tied to the DREAM Act, the bill for which we fought so hard for more than a decade. As many of us entered the movement, we were labeled or took on the title of Dreamers, with all of its perks and downsides that came with it. But we were always so much more. As we gained skills and experience, we realized that we had the power to be more than the poster child for a bill in Congress, and we began to imagine what winning would look like if we define it for ourselves. We called the shots and strategies and tactics on our own, and were sometimes applauded and sometimes yelled at for it. But we reached an epic moment that changed everything in 2010, when thousands of us came out of the shadows claiming ourselves to be undocumented and unafraid. The immigrant youth movement was on the move, even as some organizations tried to block our momentum. By the end of the same year, we led and almost won our 10-year campaign for the passage of the DREAM Act as a standalone bill in Congress. In the wake of the DREAM Act's failure, immigrant youth launched a campaign for an executive order from the president, President Obama, that would give relief from deportation from the youth whose residency he said he wanted to see legalized in the bill. Groups raised up cases of immigrant youth in deportation proceedings and said, "You cannot court us and deport us." In June 2012, after a year of campaigning, we successfully pressured him to use his power to stop the deportations for some youth. Defer Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA as we know it, brought us relief not just to college students or youth who had joined the military. Unlike the DREAM Act, DACA benefited a broader pool of youth that met the requirements in the directive from Homeland Security to Immigration Services, USCIS. However, DACA is not perfect. It's narrow and it's temporary. It also helped the Obama administration further legitimize its deportation machine. By putting us at the bottom of the list, it raised everyone else to the top of the list. Now there are at least 600,000 less people in the pool of deportables, but the net still catching the same quota of 400,000 per year. even though the administration used it to try to divide us into the dichotomies of innocents versus criminals, or the deserving versus the undeserving, and some of us fell into that language too, it should be understood as a step, a win for some, that puts us all in a stronger place to fight for all of us.
Now hold it there. Let's take a minute. There's a lot to digest there. Start with who were the groups in the beginning who weren't as thrilled. You don't have to name them by name if you don't want to, but what were kind of the forces that felt that your intervention in the immigrant rights movement maybe wasn't so welcome?
Most of the groups were pretty much the D.C. Beltway mainstream immigrant rights organizations that had for several years been pushing, and still continues some to push, the idea that the only way we can win something for immigrants in this country is to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And so they were not very thrilled by the idea that you had all of us undocumented youth that decided to say, you know, we don't want the DREAM Act to be part of this packet where we have to compromise so much enforcement and so many other bad things that, you know, we thought were bad things for the immigrant community, but rather push for this bill as a standalone and do it in our own, on our own and in our own way.
The whole conversation of the Washington Beltway establishment is something our listeners need to understand better, because I've been in the civil rights movement my whole life, and these are, I'll say, there's the NAACP down in D.C., there's the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. They do good work, but they seem to think that they know just how far to go with the president. They know exactly what to do, even though they're getting very little done, and they're very threatened by any independent challenge. Instead of saying that's great, mm-hmm. why don't you take on the president, maybe more militant than I can, and we could work together, mm-hmm. they become gatekeepers. They mm-hmm. become essentially, they don't want you in the national conversation. So how'd you crash the party?
I think for many of us, including myself, since we were young kids, especially here in California, fighting for AB 540 that gave us in-state tuition, and later on pushing for the California Dream Act that now gives us access to some private funding for college. You know, I had been in that fight since I was 14. So many, many times I had already spoken to media, had spoken in public events as an undocumented student. But most of the time, really being told what to say, and very few times I refusing to say things like, well, don't punish me for the faults of my mother that brought me here,
right.
You know,
sorry.
And that it's not my fault. And those, I think those were critical moments that later pushed us to decide we don't want to continue to use that rhetoric. And in 2010, we don't want to continue to be just the poster children for this, for the immigrant rights movement. But we really think we know the best strategies and tactics we should be using. And we think we can do it on our own, and we just went for it. We threw out our flag and just kind of braced ourselves and faced a lot of opposition from the right, but faced even more opposition from the left, and just kind of pushed through all of that. I mean, there was really no perfect way of doing it. We knew it was going to be messy, and it was, but we felt really committed to it, and we felt that it was the right move for the larger immigrant rights movement.
Well, when you say that the DREAM Act was, let's go through the fact that the DREAM Act, you won the fact that it was a standalone bill. Is that correct?
Yeah, we pushed a successful campaign as a standalone bill. It was voted in the House and Congress around, I want to say, December 16, 2010.
Right.
And we won that vote. Then it moved into the Senate.
But you won the vote in the House?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
With that right-wing House.
Yeah. And then moved on to the Senate, and it was actually in the Senate where we were 5 votes short from passing the DREAM Act.
And it was 5 Democrats.
I mean, both. There were Democrats that didn't vote that day.
Right. But were there 5 Democratic votes that if you had gotten them, you would have won?
Yeah, I would have to look back at the numbers, but I want to say yes.
Right.
Yeah.
They have a tendency to not show up.
Right.
You know? So then you were told, and I'm asking if this is true, by the President's Office of Domestic Policy Council, the Public Affairs Office, where they meet with groups. I went there. Weren't you told that now don't push the president for a presidential order because he doesn't have the authority?
Yeah.
Is that true?
That's completely true. So. Yeah. And they held that position for most of 2011. And then most of 2012 until he could no longer, or the administration as a whole could no longer say that the president had no legal authority to use his executive power to grant defer action for immigrant youth. And so, I mean, it was a long process where youth took action and sat inside his campaign offices, youth across the country. I mean, so many of, you know, I always tell people that I think the beauty of movement is when you kind of don't plan things, things kind of just happen because the momentum is there, because that groundswell is there, and there's this one very laser focused plan that folks are just falling into, even without maybe planning it, you know, ahead. And I think the campaign that led to DACA was an example of that, where there was so much momentum and there was so much pressure on the president in many different ways that he had no other choice but to act. But that just didn't happen by coincidence. You know, we did a lot of work on the ground. We pushed everyone, including allies that kept on saying it was a crazy idea and impossible, that it would never happen. But we believed that it was, and we had all the tools to do it from the ground up and won.
Well, let me disagree with you on the role of planning. What I'm getting to is I think you are a very good planner, which is what I'm going to get to. And I don't think we want to counterpose planning and spontaneity.
Right.
Because if you're taking on the Obama administration, if you're taking on the Beltway people, maybe, if you're taking on 16 different groups, you know you're sitting down and figuring out what you're doing. And if you weren't figuring out what you're doing, like, who made the decision to push on for DACA? That mm-hmm. wasn't spontaneously done. Is that fair?
No, it is fair.
Okay. So then what we're both agreeing with, because I'm going to show you the other side, then you can overplan. In other words, once you've planned, then there's some people that want to control everybody's little zig and zag, you know? And no, after a while, you do have to let the troops go. You have to let people say, all right, you get the general plan, carry it out with creativity, carry it out with spontaneity. You know, I'm not going to, because you might do something that I wouldn't have thought of, or you might do something that I might go, ooh, I'm not sure that's a good idea, but do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. We know the plan. The plan is to put every piece of pressure on Obama we can. Go out and make 1,000 flowers bloom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so do you think that's...
That's a more accurate description of what happened, but yes, yeah.
And the reason I focus on that is because you know a lot of young people today would say to you, oh, I don't have time for these meetings. You guys spend so much time thinking. Call me when I can be creative. And I go, hey, I'm sorry, we all want to be creative, but sometimes creative is sitting down and figuring out what we want to do, and you're a very good strategist, so I don't want you to give that away.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's true. The what we call the Right to Dream campaign, that later was our victory for DACA, took about 6 months to do all the legal research and put together a whole legal strategy, but also a campaign strategy to finally launch it publicly. And it took even longer to get at least some youth groups believing that it could be possible so that we could actually launch the campaign. So in total, it took about 10 months from January 2011 until October of 2011 to launch the campaign publicly. I mean, when we did, it was here in LA. I myself, along with four other people, did a sit-in inside the ICE prosecutor's office in downtown, and then were arrested and were risking deportation. But that was sort of the human moral crisis that we wanted to raise, to see, was the administration going to choose to deport us, or were they going to use their discretion to keep us, and what kind of discretion, and why not, couldn't it be a more directive discretion to that could put us all in a line, in a proactive line to get relief? And so you are right. It took 10 months to finally go public. And then there was a lot of spontaneous creative tactics that were later on very, very crucial to then pushing us to the finish line.
Well, one of another reason why it's great to have you on, and it's great to have this conversation, is that, you know, we have a campaign called President Obama Enforce, Restore, and Expand Our Civil Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And this campaign could encompass the Dreamers, not encompass meaning take it over, but create support for it. In our case, as an example, the MTA, Los Angeles MTA, has cut 1 million hours of bus service. And on March 29th, there's going to be a public hearing that we'd like you to come to, where the MTA is trying to raise the fares now. after having $5 billion, they're going to try to raise the bus fares on poor people. So we took our campaign all the way to the federal government, and we went to the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, mm-hmm. who had the power to take the money away from the MTA. Mm-hmm. And at the last minute, Villaraigosa reached them, and they backed down. So then we went to the president, and we said, you have the right to overturn the FTA. Mm-hmm. And the people at the Domestic Policy Council said, no, he doesn't have that authority. He doesn't have that authority. And you guys were the ones who said, wait a minute, we went through the same thing with the Domestic Policy Council.
Right.
And guess what? He does have the authority. He didn't do it,
mm-hmm.
but he had the authority. And the reason I say that what you're doing today is so important is that what people don't understand is that when George Bush came to power, he didn't care what court, he didn't care what Congress, he didn't care what law, he just started carrying out what he wanted.
Right.
And Obama keeps saying, my hands are tied, when most of the time he's the one who's tying them.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yeah. And I think that's why we need to continue to really expose the administration and push the president that we all thought was going to be a whole different time with President Obama being there in the White House and continue to really expose what he has been doing and show the lack of leadership he has shown, specifically on issues like yours and then immigration like ours.
Why don't you keep reading then?
Sure.
So it says now, new opportunity and the definition of insanity. Perfect segue.
For a president who campaigned as our champion, having immigrant youth sitting in his campaign offices had to have been pretty scary. DACA was a smart response to both the moral demand and the political dilemma, giving us relief and winning the election with record Latino support. Right after we won DACA, he won re-election. Everyone said that comprehensive immigration reform was inevitable, and we all geared up for a big year. Having had a personal hand in both the fight for the DREAM Act and DACA, I and many of our comrades learned lessons that meant we weren't going to fight in the same old way. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. It wasn't appeasing Republicans and coordinating with Democrats that got us to the moment where immigration was now the top of the agenda. It was all of us in motion and the powerful actions we took. So as we entered 2013, we knew we had to apply the lessons and organize in different ways.
Okay. Shared vision and different paths.
I believe that all 11 million plus current and future undocumented people in this country should be recognized and granted citizenship in a respectful manner in a dignified time frame. But I don't believe that comprehensive immigration reform, CIR, as it's best been presented, is the only way to get there. We should question the strategy and tactics that come from D.C. Newer people to the movement might not remember when major organizations opposed the DREAM Act or told us we were selfish for advocating for it. The same groups that were quick to deem DACA an important victory and receive considerable amounts of money to help with its implementation, but now they are just as fast to shoot down a piecemeal approach to immigration reform as not strategic. How can these people be the same? How can they call DACA a victory but say that fighting for incremental gains is not good enough? It might be what happens when we confuse our vision with the means to get there. Our fight is for justice, and we'll win that in any way we can.
Well, let's take a minute with this. They're going to say to you, I'm fighting for comprehensive immigration. I see the big picture. Nitty, you don't see the big picture, says the people from the D.C. Beltway. You're just walking for little things like now I guess you want more and more people legalized right away, right? That's one of your demands is to expand DACA, right?
Correct.
How would you answer them?
I think that the answer is that I think the vision is really justice for immigrants in this country, and even CIR doesn't fulfill that justice. It's one step forward. So for me, the big picture is not passing a bill. The big picture is gaining justice for our families.
And let me add and see if you think this is helpful. I mean, one of the things I would say to them is, so far the only thing you've gotten for us is the militarization of the border, that you said it's comprehensive. We never supported militarization of the border anyway. Obama confused you and said, well, if you want to get a path to citizenship, first you have to help me militarize the border. And then those forces went along and agreed to that, and that's what they have now.
Yeah. And we have had, I mean, I remember in 2010, in August of 2010, before the DREAM Act vote, they passed $600 million into the border without any type of, you know, good thing like legalization or the DREAM Act attached to it. It was purely a border bill. And so we have seen that happen again and again with nothing good for our families. So I think that that really does show that even when we compromise, we really are just folding our hands and letting Congress and the administration get away with whatever they think is best.
You're listening to the voice of Nery Dominguez, one of the leaders of the DREAM movement, and he's just written a very important article that we're going over. It's in Truth Out magazine. It's called Our Vision is More Than a Dream, What's Next for the Immigrant Youth? And we're going to get through the end of this because I want to find out the end of the movie. What is next for immigrant youth? So, Nery, let's go ahead now to the next section of the article that calls Advocates Can Walk, Chew Gum at the Same Time. And 818-985-5735, we're going to go to the phones around in 15 minutes to talk about the future of the immigrant rights movement, but not until Nery tells us what is the future of the immigrant rights movement. So keep going. Take your time.
The idea that as an immigrant rights movement, we can only do one strategy at a time, far from being empowering and furthering our agenda, hurts it and stifles any potential win along the way. An all-or-nothing approach is what gets us accepting criminalization as compromise and re-elections as endpoints, but has yet to give us equality. It is short-sighted and unacceptable. When we advocate for a specific legislation or temporary relief from the president, we're told that we shouldn't settle for less than we deserve, and at the same time, we're told to accept massive enforcement and criminalization as part of the nature of compromise when discussing a comprehensive bill. The truth is, we cannot settle for narrow strategy or limiting approaches from those who think they get to set the agenda, especially when that agenda is not organic or from the bottom up, but rather set and handed down by the same politicians who failed to act once again in 2013. If 2013 was a year of action, 2014 is a year of the Beltway catching up to the rest of the country. In 2013, in addition to the thousands that mobilized across the country in the ways we had available, hundreds of people, among them immigrant youth, went even further and put their bodies on the line to demand President Obama stop all deportations. These were bold acts of civil disobedience, calling out President Obama and his record-breaking deportations, naming him deporter-in-chief, and exposing the local officials who are throwing our families into the jaws of his deportation machine. The momentum that has been lifted across the nation through the Not One More campaign is heartfelt and powerful. It will not stop in 2014. I'd venture to say with all confidence that immigrant youth across the country are more determined and committed than ever to stop all deportations and win administrative relief for all undocumented people in the nation as a stepping stone on our path to full equality.
Now, let's take a minute there. The Strategy Center has a comprehensive urban plan now. It's called Fight for the Soul of the Cities. And cities, meaning cities all over the world. And one of our demands is open border amnesty and full human rights for immigrants now. And the campaign there, which we're very much supporting, is the Not One More. Why don't you explain to our people what Not One More means and how are we going to bring that fight to the Obama administration? And then we'll get into some of the other things, because I'd like you to just let that breathe a minute.
Sure. The Not One More campaign is a national campaign led by several organizations, including the National Organizing Day Labor Network and DLON, the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance, CEJA, and many others across the country that are really putting pressure on the president and the administration to take action now and basically say, as a down payment for reform, you should stop the deportations now. In April, we're going to hit a record of 2 million deportations under the Obama administration, the biggest one in history ever. And, you know, the campaign is really to hold him accountable, but also propose that the solution for now, as we continue the fight for immigration reform, is to stop the deportations and expand deferred action for all people so that they can work and live without fear. And so, you know, that's what the campaign's about.
Well, let me ask you one more question. I'm at 818-985-5735. You'll mainly be talking to Nery Dominguez directly, asking her questions. I'll just be sort of moderating the conversation. This is a great opportunity to talk about immigrant rights. So let me ask you this. The president has deported 2 million people, many of them I was saying to somebody today, it's not like you get picked up in a taxi cab and brought over to the airport where they put you in coach and make sure you have a nice sandwich and say, sorry, you have to go back to Mexico. A lot of people are locked up. They're put in ICE jails. They're kept away from their families with no – it's a brutal, brutal position. There's a lot of people – I mean, you know more than me. Like of the people – of every 100,000 people who are deported, how many first have to go to some kind of an ICE prison, would you say?
Well, the numbers that we are seeing just out of L.A. County, for example, are really numbers because of secure community. So a lot of folks that get picked up are for minor things, that then their fingerprints get run through the system, and because either nothing comes up or something from the past comes up, even something where they've already paid their time, quote-unquote, they've already went through due process on any type of crime, that's enough to already put them on hold. And then that's where you see the collaboration between ICE and local enforcement, where they not only then stay in our jails, but then our jails decide to hold them until ICE decides to pick them up and then get transported to a detention center. And depending the case, they could be in detention for 3 months to 3 years and then get deported. So the amount of resources that is spent in even that process alone also begs the question of who's really benefiting from having all these beds be full, right? So there's so much. I think, you know, I gave you a really short snippet of what the Not One More campaign is, but there's so much momentum right now around, you know, questions of bed quotas, questions of who's profiting, right? Groups such as GEO and others who are the ones that are getting the federal contracts to run these private facilities, these detention centers, who's really benefiting from this? And it's a multi-million dollar machine of people being detained.
And, you know, I just saw 12 Years a Slave, and one of the things that's really amazing about it is for an undocumented person, you are walking down the street, you have no papers, but you think you're free for 1 minute. Mm-hmm. You just go to work, you go to the 7-Eleven, you get some food, you're walking down the street, and the next thing you know, mm-hmm. you're swept off the face of the earth. You're in a county jail, or you're in some squad car. You're in some ICE detention center. So I think we want to talk much more, not just about the deportations, but the ugliness of how the deportations, not to say that we want better deportations, but you know what I mean, expand that. So, oh, here's my question, and we still have time. Oh, look at that. It's getting a lot of calls. I want to make sure you get time, girl. You have all your fans here. But I just want to ask you one more question, and then you're going to finish your article fast, and we'll go to the phones. Why are not more prominent Latinos taking on the president? I heard yesterday, was it the National Council of La Raza, where the woman said that the president was the deporter-in-chief? Is that correct?
Yeah, they finally shifted. So that was an example of an organization that had been struggling to really start echoing the voices from the ground saying he can do something, he can do it now.
Okay, great. We'll have that more. So that's a very example, but that's an important thing. When members of the establishment, yes, pressured by you, start calling him the deporter in chief. I think it's an important ideological victory. Waking from the dream, where do we go from here?
As we begin a new year, we have been asked by allies, colleagues, and even reporter, what's next? There's no single answer, of course, but here I humbly offer some suggestions for the broader immigrant youth movement to consider. 1. We fight for the Immigrant Youth Rights Act. The release of the GOP principles on immigration reform shows both parties agree on a pathway to citizenship for dreamers. But many of us who fought so hard for the Dream Act have outgrown it literally and figuratively. The consensus between both parties means that we can get something winnable, and if they mean it, we should hold them accountable and get it done tomorrow. Let's call their bluff. Let's do it in a way that's broader, that will be one more step forward and one that frees us from our DC label dreamers. How about we set the tone for this fight and push for a standalone bill that we will call the Immigrant Youth Rights Act, a bill that will not be based on student status or military requirements, but like DACA is based on age of entry, an act that will ensure that we will be able to petition for our parents in the short future, an act that does not exclude immigrant youth with criminal records or those who have tried to enter the country more than once, an act that will not exclude anyone based on any age cap and will expedite the adjustment of those who have already DACA or any type of prosecutorial discretion. Certainly an act that leads to citizenship in a respectful time frame. Let's imagine a campaign for this act that does not require us to be apologetic about our parents bringing us to this country. Looking out for our well-being, a campaign for undocumented youth to take ownership of their own right to be citizens that is not contingent on their educational, professional development, or military service. 2, continue to fight deportations by any means necessary. Everyone knows President Obama has the power to grant administrative relief to our families and let them work and live their lives without fear. It's up to us in solidarity with our families and community members to push him to do it. Enough said. 3, join hands with other youth of color and LGBTIQ youth fighting the systems of criminalization and incarceration of our communities and together begin holding accountable the for-profit corporations running prisons and detention centers like CCA and GEO. This aims to be a longer fight for dignity and equality and respect for all of our communities of color in this country. 4, we push for the broader immigrant rights movement to diversify its strategies. We've learned the hard way that it's possible and smart to run multiple strategies with diverse tactics, that incremental wins are steps forward in the fight and not the end points, and that the path toward dignity, equality, and respect for all of our families is made by taking many different steps forward. It's time for the rest of the immigrant rights movement to start looking like that way too. We've built the immigrant youth movement by pushing with our bodies, hearts, and minds to do the unimaginable. Before 2010, our status was something we whispered in secret. Now it's something we shout in the streets. Before last year, eyes rolled through our neighborhoods with impunity. Now we can be found locking ourselves through the entranceways when they try to tear our families apart, and turning out hundreds of our community members denouncing any new detention center or new partnership between police and ICE. We've always pushed beyond what we've been told we should be doing. What do you think we could be doing this year?
Yay, that's great. That's really beautiful. Thank you so much. Okay, now we're going to go to the phones. You're here with Nady Dominguez and Luis from Whittier. Hello, Luis.
Hello. Yes, hello.
Hello, welcome to Voices.
Thank you for taking my call. Just to pick up on the thing, comprehensive immigration reform campaign is a bottom-up movement. And to get the terms correct, I want to call out the right, the left, Obama, and you, Eric Mann, because the majority, 85% of the undocumented migrants were not immigrants, are Mexican-Americans. We are prior sovereign Mexican Americans, USA citizens, national minority, indigenous descent communities, and to call us Latinos, as Obama is doing, as the chief deporter, he's also the chief neocolonizer, and that's why I'm calling out all those mentioned, because we are not Latinos. We are not Hispanic. Our origin is from this continent, America. And the United States, as American exceptionalism calls for, is calling themselves Americans as if they're the only ones. And again, the dignity and respect and recognition of our communities and also the Mexican migrants, not immigrants, the immigrants are the people that cross the seven seas to get to this continent. Those are the real immigrants.
Thank you
but
so
we
much.
Have to have
Thank
our terms
so
correct.
Much.
We need to do that to have respect and dignity for the movement.
Thank you very much. You're very nicely said. Bill from Los Angeles. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good. I'm wondering about a different strategy. I've been trying to convince my workmates that the Democrats are not the lesser evil. They're just like, it's like cyanide and arsenic. You know, you should just not imbibe on, with bourgeois politicians because they're immigrants. Or, as this last gentleman said, working people, you know, who are migrating for work are seen by the capitalist class as...
Well, can I ask you a question? Do you have a question for Nady?
No, definitely I have a question for...
Could you tell us what the question is?
Yeah. I'm looking for a different strategy. So this is a strategy session, you know. So the strategy that I was wondering whether she could check out is that the thing about... these undocumented workers, they're seen as the capitalists as super exploitable, you see. So they're seen as, you know, they they want a certain section of the working class to be super exploitable, right?
Okay, I'm now going to go to James from Riverside. Folks, the last two speakers have had more like speeches than questions. And come on, folks. I mean, I've asked you to, you have a lot of opinions, but you have somebody who's a leader in the immigrant rights movement right here. Why don't you come up with a real question where you might really want to know her answer? And frankly, if it's another set of speeches, I'm going to have to ask you to stop because that's not what the point of the show is. So, James from Riverside, what do you got to tell us? And what questions
do
you have?
I wanted to compliment the person on her article today. I thought that diversity of tactics is a very good thing. And I wanted to know if it would include more localized actions. One of my things is, on the state level, we have Wells Fargo in the state, which has stock in Correction Corporation of America, one of the biggest corporations that incarcerates immigrants. And how does she feel about mounting statewide boycotts as a tactic? And also, if you read the LA Times yesterday, there's a pilot program in New York City now that provides lawyers to low-income people facing deportation. And I wonder if she could address those ideas, and how does she feel about it, and how should we approach it?
James, thank you so much for the constructive questions. Nady?
Yeah, I think part of the beauty of the Now One More campaign is that it's really driven by local efforts. So, for example, here in California, last year we passed the Trust Act that really limits now when ICE or local enforcement agencies should hold or honor ICE holds and work with ICE. And that has really, just alone in the city of LA, it has decreased 70% of the folks that otherwise would have still been detained and being held for ICE holds. But at the LA County level, we continue to be the county that is deporting the most people, more than Maricopa County in Arizona. And
wow.
So I think a lot of the work on the ground really means local, you know, detainer reform strategies and campaigns to continue to pass, you know, Trust Act-like bills, but that are higher. So, for example, I know a lot of youth here in LA are working really hard to push the city and the county to basically pass policies that say no ICE holds, no exceptions, period, ICE out of LA. And that speaks to the local work. About the CCA, the point about Wells Fargo and CCA, I think, you know, there's a lot of exciting partnerships with other youth that do work around the criminalization of youth of color. So, for example, there's some hope in the near future where we're going to see more and more partnerships across the nation where we're targeting, you know, companies like CCA and GEO. And I think to your question about boycott strategies, I think none of those have ever been striking out. And I think, you know, it's a matter of time of when the youth will decide to use those tactics and roll out with some of those.
What is the new name of the sheriff who replaced Sheriff Baca?
So there's an interim sheriff. His last name is Johnson. But I know very soon this year we will have elections for a new sheriff. And so I know that next week, Mercado La Paloma, if folks listening want to, we can post it on your page. There's going to be a sheriff forum at Mercado La Paloma in South LA where all of the sheriffs that are running are going to have to speak to the community about some of these issues. And I know for many of us, we're going to show up and really raise questions about what's their stance and what will be some of the policy changes they will do to make sure that we don't have ICE holds in our city.
Well, one slogan could be Sheriff Johnson, don't be Sheriff Arpaio.
Yeah,
you
or
know?
Future Sheriff
right.
of LA,
don't be
Sheriff
Arpaio.
Arpaio, yeah.
You know, so... And I think the fact that there's more lockups of immigrant in L.A. than in Arizona is shocking to me, but that's why we're on the show to learn things.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see who else we have on the line. David from Upland. Thanks for your patience, David. What questions do you have for Nady?
Yes. I know the Dreamers Act and the Dreamer organ, you know, the groups is a large agenda, and there's a lot going on in terms of, like, the size of it because of the population of the Dreamers and the young people. However, I come to find out today that many of the people that are being picked up at the border right now are actually under the age of 15, trying to cross into the States by themselves. And I was wondering if your guest there had any response to that. They're being picked up at the border, coming in from mostly Central America by themselves, In fact, one situation was a three-year-old that was left at the border by the smuggler so they wouldn't get caught. And the three-year-old was picked up. And now all these children are being deported back to their country that they were leaving to try, because, and the reason why they left, because they were trying to find their parents who are living here in the U.S. So I was just curious to see if that organization is also addressing that issue.
Thank you so much.
I think, I mean, yeah, it is one of the scariest things to think about, how many children and youth are crossing the border as we speak and how much they're putting at risk. And I think that's why in my article, I really was hoping to push our Dreamer quote unquote movement, the immigrant rights movement and the immigrant youth movement to think about what we haven't thought about. For example, this population, to really push ourselves to go beyond so that we're going to push for any legislative strategy that we push for something that is winnable, but also broad enough. And I think, you know, making sure that it includes children and youth like the ones, you know, we just heard about, I think it's important. And I think it requires a lot of thinking through and research and making sure, and it's hard, right, in any policy to try to catch the biggest number possible. But we know that in the process, a lot of things will be negotiated. So I think if we were going to go for a Dream Act bill, why not just go for something way broader? That really includes a lot of these other populations that aren't included in the kind of original Dream Act, right?
Well, I had a couple of questions, but because we have some nice listeners, let's make sure they get on. Robert from Santa Clara, we have about 5 minutes.
Hi, nice to meet you. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to ask you something. Have you ever thought about, you know, as part of your campaign to push immigration reform? As we know, there is, I read last time, there's like about 500,000 kids, Latino kids, that, you know, turn 18 eligible to vote. And I really think this is more something like a political issue than, you know, than just talking about an immigration reform. Have you guys thought about pushing by that side, you know, and, you know, encouraging people to register and have their kids to vote, you know, on their favor, you know, whoever is going to help them out? You think that will work?
I mean, I think what I was saying is that we need all of it. We need people that do exactly what you were saying, the voter registration strategies and getting out there and making sure that people know how to register to vote and that they can vote. And, you know, I don't do that myself, but I think that that's part of it. And my argument, or what I'm trying to say, is that we need everything and that we shouldn't prioritize one strategy over another, but that they're all equally important and in motion will be the most powerful that we can.
Yeah, and I would add to you, thank you, and I think I would just add, exactly right, is that when people want to help, it's not good to have a debate about should you register voters or do direct action or should you go against corporations. People are going to do the kind of things they want to do anyway.
Right.
So you might as well encourage, and I think if the system feels it's being fought on a lot of fronts,
mm-hmm.
if it feels like the companies are being fought and the pay prisons are being fought and the people are registering voters, it sounds good. I have... I'm sorry, Morris in Long Beach. You're our last caller, and congratulations, and thank you for waiting. You are voices.
Not a problem.
Go ahead.
I think your observation, young lady, regarding our legal system becoming more privatized is right on the money. I was also wondering, do you think it would be a good idea that if folks who were coming to the country illegally were coming as a result of CIA activities in their country, for example, the activities in Honduras, or the activities they're trying in Venezuela, or the activities in Guatemala. And there is a pro bono service available now to help people who are trying to, or that have come into the country illegally, and they need to get some more support because it's just ridiculous to have a three-year-old child standing in front of a judge without an advocate. But anyway, if those folks were to say, hey, y'all got some activities going on in our country, and we can't live there anymore, that's why we're coming to yours, would that be something that y'all could consider? Thank you very much.
I personally think that, yes, the U.S. has played a huge part in displacing many, many, many people around the world that then later migrate to the States. And I don't think I have, like, a, you know, the strategy outlined for something like that. But I agree with you that, you know, we have the United States has played a role in displacing these families. And that's why they're coming and fleeing, not just economic hardship, but also the violence happening in their own countries.
In the last couple of minutes, Nadie, let's talk about really how people would get involved with you. Like, let's start with, how do they find your article?
So to find the article, you can go to my Facebook page, I guess. And then also, I know it's going to be on your show's page.
Yes, it will.
It will be. So
which
you can
voicesfrontlines.com.
Folks should also definitely visit the Not One More campaign webpage. And that is not one more dad. I want to say ORG. I'm sorry, I don't know it by memory. But if you also go to my Facebook page, I'll make sure to put the link up.
Can you tell us what your Facebook page is?
And it's just Nady Dominguez. So you can look up my name, N-E-I-D-I Dominguez, and then you'll find it. Or look up the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance Facebook page, CIYJA, C-I-Y-J-A, and also find information about the Not One More campaign.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show. You really do bring some very original thinking and a lot of guts, you know. So you've done great work on the ground, and I encourage you to keep your writing going.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to get out of here. So everybody, this is Voices from the Frontlines. But we'll have a good show for you next Tuesday. Take good care of yourselves.